This is the rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shermont Spina. Coming up on the show, WUFT host Glenn Richards spoke with singer-songwriter Graham Nash ahead of an upcoming performance in Florida. And later, a Gainesville school robotics team is competing on an international stage. But first, a new Pulitzer-funded investigation from WUFT looks into the rise in Parkinson's cases and its link to environmental exposures. It's called Poisoned Pathways. One of the reporters on the project, WUFT's Leanne Anderson, wrote about health disparities that Black people face in getting diagnosed with Parkinson's. The story centers around Dominique Thomas, a woman who has had three family members die of complications related to the disease and at least four others living with symptoms. Here's a clip of Thomas speaking about her experience in a video accompaniment for the story.
We don't talk about diseases and we don't talk about what's going on medically. They consider it as, you know, my family has the shakes. But now, you know, I'm seeing hands shaking. I'm seeing the falling, I'm seeing the stooping of the walking in some of my family members who don't recognize that this is Parkinson's.
Leanne's reporting found that communities of color are disproportionately exposed to environmental pollutants linked to Parkinson's, and Black Americans are underdiagnosed for the disease. I asked Leanne earlier about what she found throughout the course of her reporting.
I just kind of figured out that clinical trials aren't fully representative of people, of Black people in this country who have Parkinson's. A lot of the clinical trial numbers have a really small amount of Black people in those trials. So we'll never actually, I guess, at least for now, we won't actually know how many Black people in this country have Parkinson's. And just also just talking about, I guess just kind of learn how complex health disparities are when it comes to like why people may struggle to, you know, get treatment for their health and stuff like that. Kind of like how much it has linked to, you know, the history of this country and how people have been treated historically.
What did you expect to find and what did you actually learn?
Going into story research, I kind of wanted to know, I guess, how much Parkinson's has an impact on, you know, the Black community. And I just kept finding that, that, you know, a lot of Black people weren't getting it at the same rates a lot of white Americans do. So, you know, I wanted to find a Black person who has Parkinson's and who had that environmental exposure and had some type of, I guess, barrier when it comes to, you know, getting treated for their Parkinson's. I wanted to find an expert who can talk about how Parkinson's might show up a bit differently in Black people. I was able to find this woman who has multiple people in her family who has Parkinson's. Finding Dominique, her story is so special in the sense of like all her family members don't want to go to the doctor. They're completely reluctant to go to the doctor. And it kind of illuminates how like, there are probably so many other people like Dominique's family. It kind of shows that like we don't really know how many people, Black people in this country, actually have Parkinson's because there are people like that who just don't go to the doctor for their own personal reasons and stuff like that.
And what do you hope people will learn from the personal accounts of Dominique?
I kind of would like to, I guess, kind of just start off with for people to not be ashamed of their Parkinson's. I feel as if some people might want to hide or just not want to talk about having Parkinson's. They just have some shame when it comes to being perceived as somebody who is weak. But I just feel as if the more that you talk about it, the more that you kind of normalize it, kind of make it something that is normal to, I guess, talk about and normal to have. So more people can come out of the shadows and maybe talk about their experiences with Parkinson's. I want people of color, particularly Black people, to get out of the mindset that like this is a disease that only impacts white people when it doesn't. Like this disease isn't racialized. You know, in the trials, it may seem as if like white people might get it more, but like anybody can get it.
Leanne, thank you so much for joining me today.
And thank you so much for having me.
That was WUFT reporter Leanne Anderson talking about her reporting on health disparities Black people face in getting diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Her story is part of a Pulitzer-funded investigation called Poisoned Pathways, looking into the rise in Parkinson's and its link to environmental exposures. You can find Leanne's story along with the rest of the project at WUFT.org/poisonedpathways. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know your community's history? It's time for a trivia question. Needles was the name of the first Florida-bred horse to win which major race in 1956? Stay tuned to the end of the show for the answer. And now, an audio postcard. You can think of each story as an auditory exploration of North Central Florida, where the people closest to the story tell the story. For Karen Rolfe, all her life, her love for horses has never faded. Now, for her 7 horses, she has an open barn with a disco ball, shorter fences for the animals to mingle, a beanbag chair, and wind chimes.
I can't remember a time when I didn't love horses. There wasn't any specific moment that like, oh, we did this and then horses. So yeah, the joke in my family is that my first words were, I want a horse, then mom and dad. This is Natia. She's a PRE, so a Spanish horse, Andalusian. And she is 17 now.
You're gonna smile. You're so cute. Are you begging for cookies?
All my horses have a cue. That's my cue to give her a cookie. So usually I'm giving the cues for her to do something, so they all have something that they can do, and it's my cue that I'm supposed to do something for them. I just chose, and they put their lip up like that. It's my cue to give them a cookie. So I'm very well trained, aren't I, Nithya?
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Karen Rolfe, and I created the Dressage Naturally program, and it's where I help humans and horses learn how to move in harmony and to enjoy the process.
Right, hold right there, sweetie.
Around here, the most important thing is that the horses are happy and that we get along, and then we can understand each other and communicate, and then anything we build on top of that is bonus points for me. I ask myself, for any of my horses, if they wrote a book today and they called the book My Life with Karen, I want to think, what kind of book would it be? There might be chapters, you know, one chapter is like, ooh, that was really hard. Or one chapter is like, geez, Karen was in a bad mood today. And another chapter was like, oh my God, that was so much fun. The chapters can be different, but I want to feel like the overarching book is like, Life with Karen, 2 thumbs up. And that's my goal. It's hard work, but I keep saying, well, I guess I still want to do it because no one's forcing me to do this. And it just, the horses, they require that I be my authentic self because they see right through you if you're not. They read intention and body language, and that needs to match. Any personal development I do is so that I'm a better person for my horse. So they're a really good excuse to do that, and then of course that benefits everything.
Hi, Atomic.
And Atomic, this one's gonna get jealous, so he's like, hey, I'm the star of the show. Okay. He is well named, and I thought we could play with him a little bit. I'll show you some of the tricks he does. He's 23 and he's had a career-ending injury, but he's still okay to be around. Would you like to show off a little bit? But we can play catch. Hey, ready? And this is, come here. Okay. I have what used to be a ball. This is a big piece of fabric. He just tends to like it. And I'm gonna throw it to him. He catches it, and then he twirls it around and throws it back to me. So you just never quite know when he's gonna let go. Good boy. And so I'll come out for night check sometimes. You know, 3 hours later, I come back in. My husband's like, what are you doing out there? I'm like, petting my horse, doing a little meditation. I have a little chair I bring out, and I do meditations, and they'll gather around, or we do silly horse tricks. It's just, you come out here, and it's, you know, it's hard to go back inside. Something about a horse.
Karen Rolfe is a horse trainer and owner in Redick, Florida. That audio postcard was produced by WUFT's Krista Jensen. You can find more of her work, along with a photo from this story, at wuft.org/fm. This is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Coming up on the show, we have another edition of our Snapchats segment, this time about a photo of fireflies. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shearmont-Spina. Graham Nash is a two-time inductee into both the Songwriters Hall of Fame and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of The Hollies and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. This past Record Store Day saw the release of a boxed set called Crosby, Stills, and Nash, The Solo Albums, that includes Nash's 1971 Songs for Beginners. His latest album, Now, was released in 2023. WUFT host Glenn Richards recently spoke with the singer-songwriter and activist ahead of this week's concerts at the Pontevedra Concert Hall. Let's take a listen.
You know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express, they're taking me to Marrakesh.
Congratulations on just an incredible life and career, and really been going back and listening to the Now album. And I hear this definite through line from Now all the way back to Songs for Beginners, even with the titles, Now and Beginning. But I hear, I sense a little bit of Then in the mix on Now, kind of like looking back while you're also looking around at what's happening now.
My wife, Amy, sent me a quote from Nina Simone. And Nina said that no matter what kind of an artist you are, a painter, a sculptor, a musician, you must reflect the times in which you live. And I've always taken that to heart. So, yes, there's a combination of love songs and you know, songs that, you know, are about things that have pissed me off.
Is it surprising that a lot of the themes you have explored on your first album are still prevalent today?
I feel two ways about it. One, I'm honored that my music has lasted so long. But lastly, it's a pain in the ass that we have not learned from history. And a lot of those songs, you know, Military Madness and Chicago, We Can Change the World and Immigration Man are still, even Teacher Children is incredibly relevant today. And that's great, but wow.
Since I'm based at the University of Florida in Gainesville, you have a history with the Heartbreakers. Most recently, a really great vocal contribution to Mike Campbell on the Dirty Knobs album. The Dare to Dream track is
yeah,
excellent.
Well, you know, the truth is I've known Tom a long, long time. He was one of the roadies when the Hollies played in Florida, in Gainesville, 50-odd years ago. He was a student at the university there, and when the Hollies needed to move our amps and move our giant speakers that we had, he was one of the people that did that.
Are you writing any new music?
Oh, of course. I finished a song with my wife, Amy, about ice.
Is that something you're going to put out on its own, or are you saving that for a collection?
I don't know what I'm going to do with it right now. You know, I've talked to the lads in the band and they like it. And so we're probably going to try and do it live soon.
Probably not in time for Pontevedra?
Maybe. It's possible. You know, they love my music and they can play anything. It's really an amazing band.
Let's make it a better life. Leave it for the kids.
That was Hall of Famer Graham Nash talking with WUFT's Glenn Richards. Nash is performing this Friday and Saturday at the Pontevedra Concert Hall. Well, it's time for another segment of Snapchats, our conversations with photographers where we ask them to describe a recent or favorite photo. Today, a conversation with Kristen Grace, a photographer for the Florida Museum of Natural History. She photographed emerging fireflies one April evening back in 2015. WUFT reporter Emiliano Luna went out to her home to interview her in the exact spot where those fireflies emerged over 10 years ago.
In this photograph, I was hand-holding my camera. It was actually the very first time that I realized we had fireflies in our backyard. And so I was so excited. I just grabbed my camera and ran out into the backyard and started playing around with photos. And I didn't have a tripod with me. And so it just turned out it was kind of like a, you know, a beautiful oops where I was breaking all the rules of photography and wound up with probably one of the most favorite images I've ever made. Magical is really a word that comes to mind when I think of this firefly photo because, you know, it's really quite amazing what nature can produce, you know, especially when you think of like bioluminescence and, you know, creatures emanating their own light. And I just think it's a really neat, you know, display and a show that they're putting on for each other. It's a little blurry because it's a long exposure and I'm hand holding the camera, but it's in a way that is very kind of dreamlike and maybe a suggestive of how fleeting the moment is in time. Generally, when I bring my camera out and my tripod, I will actually often come right over into this area. Just watch your step. And so I'll set up a tripod and yeah, just kind of hunker down. And it lasts about a half hour, 45 minutes, the emergence into the evening. So they literally just kind of like rise up from the ground, come about 4 feet up and just twinkle around looking for their mate. And then they start to dissipate. So after about an hour, you know, they start to kind of go out into the night and it's not as dense. And then I'll do it all again the next night. As a photographer for the Natural History Museum, it's my job to visually communicate all types of things museum related, right? So we do events and we have exhibits. Chances are if you've explored some of the exhibits at the museum, you've seen a lot of my pictures. I think it's really important to be able to provide the visuals and allow people to see what, you know, researchers are talking about and what they're studying and how, you know, we can learn from the past and use the collections to influence research that's happening today. A camera is a great way to slow down and observe your natural surroundings. I love using my camera to kind of take a minute and sit in one place and sit still and observe what's happening around me. And, you know, there's a whole world, especially a tiny world, when it comes to insects and small things that we pass by every day. We just have to know what type of environment to find them and also protect those environments. It's important that we maintain their habitat so we continue to see their magical twinkles.
That was professional photographer Kristen Grace talking about a fireflies photograph she took in her 3-acre wooded backyard. You can see the photo in question on our website, wuft.org/fm. Today's story was produced by WUFT's Emiliano Luna. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. As a reminder, our trivia question this week, Needles was the name of the first Florida-bred horse to win which major race in 1956? The answer's coming up at the end of the show. That's after a quick break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. In a world full of Legos, let's build a robot. That's the idea behind First Lego League, a global robotics network that promotes STEM education in elementary and middle school. For the first time ever, a local Gainesville team will be attending the World Championship in Houston from today through Sunday. WUFT's Tess Lippincott went to the team's practice last weekend to see how this group of school kids is preparing.
3, 2, 1, Lego.
That's the kickoff. The kids have already programmed the robot's entire run. And filled with excitement and nerves, now they press go and hope it does what they want it to. The team consists of 5 members. 7th graders James Du, Dennis Chi, Jacob Lee, Andrew Zhao, and 4th grader Daniel Chi. They attend the Fraser School in Gainesville, and they call themselves the Turbo Gatorbots. They won first place out of 800 teams at the state championship in February, sending them to the World Championship in Houston, Texas. They're going to compete against about 200 teams from 66 different countries across the globe. The challenge? To make a sort of Lego robot archaeologist. One that can lift up pieces, push around artifacts on a map, and even reconstruct a statue. All of that in 2.5 minutes. Dennis explains how it's done.
And we also use a special code called PID. And we actually had many versions. What it does is when the robot like faces a bump and it turns a little, it can self-correct during the run.
It's not easy.
What ways can we minimize travel distance in order to complete the most tasks? And it also has to be reliable because like in the worlds and like in different competitions, the math's always slightly different. So you have to make the robot like very consistent.
The team actually built two robots, one to compete and one to solve a real world problem. How to make archaeology less destructive. That's part two of the competition. The Turbo Gatorbots made a prototype that uses things like AI to detect artifacts in the ground and figure out the best way to dig them up. Here's Andrew, and remember, he's 12 years old.
And we actually tested it in the real world and it actually worked. So it's like an actual practical like example of the sensors, different sensors we've researched. Which is one thing we've improved from going to worlds.
With the help of their coaches, the team has filed 3 separate patents for their work this season. Jacob says the tournament means so much more than what it seems.
It's just like, it's not just a robotic competition. That's only like 5% of it. It's really teaching you all these skills you need for life.
And his teammate Andrew agrees.
We also learned like how to manage our tasks. Like on our robot design presentation, we have a section where it's project management. So like in the future, like we can also like implement that into our lives so we can like manage like a big project in like our careers or yeah.
The coaches say that they have seen the kids grow up so much in the last 2 years. Coach Oscar Hengshan Chi says they want to make sure that the kids are really ready to compete on the world stage.
One thing I believe we are still working on is to make sure the kids psychologically prepared to attending the world championship. So before we attend a state, for example, state championship, they basically are representing their team only. But now this time we're representing not only Gainesville but also Florida and even representing the U.S. to compete with a team from other countries in the world.
And the kids say that they're going to make their hometown proud. Tess Lippincott, WUFT News.
This story was produced by WUFT's Grace Tusseri and reported by Tess Lippincott. You can find both of their work online at wuft.org/fm. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. The team that made the show possible this week includes Dave Barriswain, Dana Hill, Leanne Anderson, Krista Jensen, Emiliano Luna, Glenn Richards, Grace Tusseri, and Tess Lippincott. Special thanks to the Dean of the College, Hub Brown, and Newsroom Director Ethan Majok. Do you have comments or questions about the show today or ideas for future shows? Email us at therundown@wuft.org. And if you want to go back and listen to this episode again or any of our previous episodes, you can find the show in podcast form on wuft.org/therundown or wherever you get your podcasts. Our trivia question this week was, Needles was the name of the first Florida-bred horse to win which major race in 1956? The answer, if you've been paying attention to what's happening this weekend, is the Kentucky Derby. At the beginning, Needles had to overcome a lot of odds as a young foal, dealing with constant sickness and unstable conditions. It was during this time that the horse received his name, due to the amount of needles used by vets when trying to care for him. Despite this, he went on to win America's most prestigious horse race and sparked a wave of national attention for Florida's thoroughbred industry, which was still in its early stages. He was inducted into the Florida Sports Hall of Fame in 1974 and the United States National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame in 2000. That's it for the Rundown. I'm Kristen Shearmont-Spina.